Hi, I'm Arun Vanagopal, and you're listening to Midday. In First Reformed, the new film from famed writer and director Paul Schrader, Reverend Ernst Toller, played by Ethan Hawke, is a solitary, middle-aged parish pastor at a small Dutch Reformed church in upstate New York, on the cusp of celebrating its 250th anniversary. Once a stop on the Underground Railroad, the church is now a tourist attraction catering to a dwindling congregation, eclipsed by its nearby parent church called Abundant Life, with its state-of-the-art facilities and its 5,000-strong flock. When a pregnant parishioner asks Reverend Toller to counsel her husband, a radical environmentalist, the clergyman finds himself plunged into his own tormented past, and equally despairing future. I'm very pleased it brings both Paul Schrader and Ethan Hawke to our studio. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello, world.
Paul, over the course of your career, you have you've dealt with a lot of very intense characters, among them Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, who's a very isolated and very lonely man. Tell us a little about Reverend Toller, who is the main character played by Ethan in First Reformed.
Well, this is a man who has a crisis of faith and also a crisis inspired by what we've done to our environment. So he has what Kierkegaard called the sickness unto death, despair. But it's not only an internal despair, but it is progressively an external despair. He's trying to deal with it through a number of ways, writing a journal, the liturgy of the church, drinking. And then he comes upon this young man who is an environmental radicalist, and he counsels him and in a way catches the young man's virus.
You've dealt with faith and religion multiple times over the course of your career. Were you religious as a kid?
I'm a product of the Christian Reformed Church in Michigan, Western Michigan, Westside Christian, Grand Rapids Christian High, Calvin College. So, you know, it's in my DNA, and that's how my computer was programmed. When I got to Los Angeles in the film business, I spent considerable time running away from it. But you can run as fast and far as you want. You will never outrun your childhood.
And so how would you say that the experience of having faith impacted the writing of this particular script?
Well, I mean, when I was young, before I was a screenwriter, when I was a film critic, I wrote a book about theological aesthetics, about spiritual style in film. And I thought that had sort of taken care of my interest in that field. And I thought I would never make a film of that sort. And then around 40 years later, events conspired to say, okay, it's now time to write that movie you swore you would never write.
How about you, Ethan? Were you? Do you come from a devout family?
Yes, I do.
Which grew up?
Well, I grew up all over the place with a single mother. My mother is Episcopalian, and my father is too, and my stepfather was Catholic, and so I had a lot of religion was omnipresent in my childhood.
And is that something that you stayed with?
It's something I stayed with in regards to something that I think about in a daily way. Mm-hmm. I don't practice in the way that my parents did.
What did you think of this character, Reverend Ernst Toller, and the script when you first read it?
Well, very early in Toller's journals, he talks about it. He finds himself quoting the Catholic writer Thomas Merton, who was always a real hero to me growing up and one of the main inspirations for my adult relationship to faith, the way that his faith continually adapted and moved in his life is very inspiring. He wasn't brittle. He wasn't a fixed entity. He was a learning, a teacher who was very open to learning. And it's inspiring to read his journals and his books because it opens your mind. And so there was something about Toller's relationship to Merton that was an in for me.
And there's an interesting moment in the film where your character is told that he needs to essentially live in the real world, mm-hmm. And uses the example of Thomas Merton to say, like, Thomas Merton did not live in the real world, which you really bristle at.
Yeah.
How do we make sense of this?
Books written about that. You know, there's a lot of interesting books. Merton and he carried on letters with all kinds of activists who were in the Catholic faith doing more, you know, that were engaged in the struggle in a way that, and they were very critical of him for sitting and taking his walks in the woods. And I find that argument extremely exciting and interesting, that debate about, I personally find it moving that whether it's monks or nuns, that there's somebody out there who's decided not to participate. I find it, when I wake up in the morning and I know that somebody is not participating, there's a group of people out there who are not trying to get ahead, mm-hmm. I find that really relaxing.
You think of it, some people might think of it as in political terms, do you think of it in those terms as almost an act of resistance to just the sort of like the pressures of the world, or do you think of it a different way?
Well, I think that Merton might say that you're assuming that the value of prayer has doesn't participate. Well, I think the value of prayer in his mind was a very active thing to do, and that sometimes you needed to be apart from the game to have a objectivity and to pray about it.
So what is your character's internal struggle?
Well, the character's three-dimensionally written, so it's not one thing.
Sure.
He's lost his son, he's lost his marriage, and so he's finding himself with this new parish and trying to put himself back together. And right when he is doing so, he gets confronted with being asked in a very serious way where he stands politically. And if you care about the environment and you care about what's happening to our world, there's a lot of legitimate things to be extremely upset about.
And Paul, as Ethan was saying, action and activism, specifically environmental activism, is really at the heart of this film. Why did you choose climate change as a focus for the activism in this film?
Well, you know, for thousands of years, humankind's been having a discussion about why we're here and where we're going. And it was always a hypothetical discussion. You know, we would have it, and our children would have it, and their great-great-grandchildren would have it. Well, all of a sudden, we're starting to feel that maybe that's not such a hypothetical discussion, and there's the possibility that we as a species will not get out of this century in our present form. Well, that's a lot of gravitas. And when you have a man who is, you know, wrestling with faith and trying to pray, this becomes, you know, an added weight. And, you know, it is a serious movie, and I have no apology for making a serious movie at this time. In fact, it's the movie I want to make at this time.
Ethan's character is, he's grappling with all kinds of things. As he said, the death of his son, he's dealing with alcohol, and he's also trying to counsel people who have their own problems. In this film, does this make him better able to counsel people, or does it make it more difficult to do that job?
Well, he's actually quite good at it. And you, in the first half of the film, you see him and you sort of admire him and say to yourself, well, if I had a minister like that, you know, I certainly would talk to him too. And then, of course, as his internal life starts to veer and become more problematic, then you realize, wait a second, perhaps this man is not, you know, as steady on the ground as he should be.
Ethan, what do you think about that? Do you think that, you know, early on in this film, as you're sort of seen putting to practice all that you're grappling with, do you think it made you better able to sort of like perform the service to counsel someone? Or do you think that it's almost like he's seeing that the hollowness of these words that he's imparting when he himself isn't sure what life's about?
What makes it so wonderful to perform is that the words aren't hollow. The words he says are very substantive. They're just other words too, and the world is very confusing. And people love dualistic thinking, where something is either this or that. And he's wise enough to challenge the young man he's counseling to not to think non-dualistically. And he shows a great deal of wisdom in that counseling. But he also is in a great deal of pain. And so I didn't really think about judging the character in that way. You know, part of the job of being an actor, right, is to be your character's lawyer. You just become their advocate. You try to get inside their body, inside the way that they're thinking, how they wear their hair, how they talk, how they think, and how they justify their actions. And one of the things that's really brilliant about Paul's writing is that all the characters in the movie are not one thing. You know, I was like, I love a movie when I can smell the people. You know, when they're not playing one color, they're playing lots of colors. And it's really challenging as an actor.
How did you make sense of this practice, this new practice he has, your character has, of daily journal writing? What is he trying to, why is he doing this?
I'll answer that.
Sure.
I mean, he describes it as a form of prayer. It's a way of, contacting God. What is unstated is if he was actually able to pray, he wouldn't have to resort to a journal as a form of prayer. And so it's freighted that he needs to write these words down because God isn't talking to him.
And he has to be ruthless. He's quite ruthless in his his assessment of his own writing.
Yeah, there's a great Willie Nelson song called "Too Sick to Pray," and I used to think about that song that's why he's writing this journal. You know, he can't hear his own voice. He can't finish his own thoughts. Sometimes it does help. I find it helps a lot to write it down, to keep your focus. Watching your own inner life. And I think he starts with an honest desire to be to heal himself.
Yeah, I mean, and it is interesting. It's fascinating, really, like, that this act, and we see his hand put down, like, the distance between the idea or the feelings in his head and communicating it through his arm down to the page is quite a tortured process of actually trying to distill it down to something that he feels is authentic, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we learn a lot about characters. You see, in every good screenwriting class, I mean, Paul, I'm sure you know this, that they would tell you not to do a voiceover or a journal. They always are scared of it. But really what they're doubting is that you're that good of a writer. It's a brilliant, I love it in a good film, but it has to be part of the spine of the movie for me. You know, if it's something ancillary put on later, it doesn't work. But for me, these journals were the heart of the character.
Was that you actually writing those notes, or do you have a hand model?
A hand model. Yeah,
no. That's pretty good handwriting. All caps. Was that a tough choice to make? Like these, like little things.
That's the way I write.
Is it
really? It's easier to stay in character.
Yeah, I asked him to do it cursive, but we no longer have those skills, unfortunately.
It is a lost art.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Tell us a little about the connection between this very small church of your character, of Ethan's character, and the mega church of Pastor Jeffers, who's played by Cedric the Entertainer, actually.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, two types of worship that seem to have established themselves now. One is the traditional devotion-based worship, which is more quiet and contemplative. And then there's this phenomenon of the arena-based entertainment worship of the megachurch. Now, I'm not going to say one is better than the other because there's plenty of Christians in both. My preference, of course, is for the church I was raised in, which is the quieter, sparer church. But most Christians, I would say, at least most of my relatives have migrated over to the larger churches. I find them more welcoming, more entertaining, and so forth. So that the Reverend Toler is kind of a relic of an older form of worship, and the Cedric's church is a more contemporary form of worship.
And Cedric actually is sort of his boss, in a sense, is he?
Well, he's paying for the bills. I mean, this little tiny church can't pay for itself, so it's either going to get paid for by some historical society or some larger religious institution.
And I guess the part of the conflict of this movie is whether or not Ethan, your character, Reverend Toler, is allowed to sort of speak his mind freely against the pressures of political pressure, so to speak.
The people who donate. It's always a pressure whenever you get inside any big business, when money always has the loudest voice.
Is it harder in an era like this for a quieter church to survive, given all the distractions that we're constantly grappling with?
Well, there are fewer of them. And the scope of meditation has spread out. So people who 100 years ago found church as a meditative place have now found other forms of meditation. So church doesn't really have a corner on meditation like it once did. So in my particular church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, my side of town, there were 7 churches when I grew up, and now there are 3 that participate in that way. And, of course, there's a huge megachurch.
So when you say other forms of meditation, I mean, this is a form, this was a place for people to come together and meditate together. Am I right?
Well, I believe this. I mean, you don't walk out of church because you're bored. You go to church to be bored. You go to church to have that quietness, to collect your thoughts, to ruminate, to put your week together. I feel this quite strongly. That's why I do go to church. That's why I went to church yesterday. Other people may go to... you know, have a hootenanny, but that's not what it works for me.
How did you come to cast Cedric the Entertainer? There was a moment where I was like, wait, that guy looks very familiar. And he's the role of the pastor of the megachurch. It's called Abundant Life.
Yeah, we have such a propensity to stereotype this guy. We have a box for him. And no matter who you cast, they're going to shove him in that box and make him fit. And I thought, who can I cast that will be very hard to put into that Pat Robertson box? And so I started thinking around, and the idea of a black entertainer who people see of as their friend, as, you know, I thought, you know, that might help me. That might keep him from being stereotyped.
And Ethan, what's your relationship with this man, with Cedric the Entertainer's character, who Pastor Jeffers?
Well, you get the sense that there's some history there between the two men. He's clearly my boss, and he's clearly saved me from the wreckage. You get the sense the movie begins a few years after something terrible happened, the loss of the son. My character was a former military chaplain. He talked his son into joining the military, and he was killed in Iraq. And the movie opens after that, and you get the sense that this man, Jeffords, was my friend, is my friend, and helps put me back on my feet by giving me this small parish. And ironically, that parish is part, it's a, you know, part of the historical society in that it housed members of the Underground Railway. And I find it really interesting that that's the framework, because what was radical 100 years ago, or, you know, however many years ago, 150 years ago in the Underground Railroad, is now seen in such favorable light. And right now, radical environmental terrorists are seen as, you know, a menace to society. And it's a very interesting place to put Reverend Toler.
Paul, where can we see this film?
A24, which I'm very proud to be involved with. It's the kind of the smallest studio with the mostest right now. And we're just playing New York and LA this week. And they branch out, I think, to 24 cities next week, which is Memorial Day weekend. And then it will go on from there. We had a very successful opening weekend, which bodes well for, you know, further reach of the film.
Well, thank you to Paul Schrader, the director of, and to Ethan Hawke, the star of First Reform, for joining me today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.